This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
So welcome and thank you for joining us today for our Striving to Make Index Strategies Net Zero Heroes podcast. So my name is Stefan Bilby. I'm head of index distribution at LGIM. Joining me today is Fadi Zahir, head of index solutions, and Jeanette Andrews, who's a senior representative from our investment stewardship team. So by the name, we're discussing net zero today. It's very much a popular topic for a lot of our investors, and the race to net zero is well and truly on. And today we're really much going to be talking about what does net zero actually mean? And what's our definition on net zero? What does it mean for an investment portfolio? And why is action required today in terms of taking it forward from an investment perspective? And Fadi will then talk about what does this mean in terms of taking forward for an investment portfolio? What are the inherent challenges for achieving this outcome for an investment portfolio? What are the particular nuances for an index solution in this space? Looking at two of the prominent approaches. And then Jeanette will summarize in terms of really emphasizing the importance of engagement in terms of underpinning the approaches in this space and offering a really clear and directive message to companies in terms of action, in terms of taking forward this initiative. Jeanette, if I go past you in the first instance to really just describe what does net zero actually mean in terms of a definition and for a directive?
Well, there are a lot of climate terms that we hear in the press, and they can change quite frequently. If you think 5 or 6 years ago, we were all talking about the Paris Accord and the Paris Agreement. Now it is all about meeting the world's 1.5 degree goals and moving towards net zero by 2050. And of course, the language we use is important. So net zero, the way that we think about it, is it means that on average, at a global level, greenhouse gas generation is reduced as far as possible, and the residual emissions must be matched by removal or absorption. So this does not mean that every company, sector or country will move at the same speed or even on the same pathway. Importantly, it doesn't mean that there's not going to be any emissions, but it's that balance of emission generation and emission removal. Achieving net zero by 2050 will touch on all companies, all of society, and all economies. That's broad.
But Jeanette, surely 2050 is a long way away, especially from an investment perspective.
It is. It's 30 years. But the challenge and scale involved in order to get there means that, first of all, it's cheaper and easier to transition today and to start today. But most importantly, in 7 to 8 years from now, we will have exhausted the carbon budget of the world, over which a 1.5 degree warming threshold will be surpassed. So that means you'll start to see the catastrophic global consequences of not meeting our global goals. And that is why, to avoid the worst impacts of raising temperatures, we cannot wait to take action. And emissions need to be halved at that global level no later than 2030. That's only 7 years away and puts it into an immediate investment time horizon. And it means the time to act is now.
And can clients diversify away from this topic or issue?
Well, not easily, because like any systemic risk, and we consider climate change to be the greatest systemic risk that our clients face, it's really hard to diversify away from. All companies have emissions, and they aren't the usual high carbon suspects. Whether it's technology companies or food retailers, they all have a really important role to play in the transition of the economy and building up low carbon solutions. So that's why you can't easily diversify away from this risk within portfolios. Additionally, the world is likely to remain substantially dependent on fossil fuels and high carbon processes in the short and medium term. They will be critical to the opportunities in the transition to a low carbon economy. So, for example, take the fossil fuel industry. Their products and skills will remain sought after, for example, as a provider of hydrogen for industrial processes. So the highest risk companies are often hold the key to the opportunities in order to have that smooth transition. And that's why it's really difficult to diversify away.
I wanted to comment on the, well, it's hard to diversify this systemic risk. It's interesting to recognize that you can manage this risk. When I look at it from an index perspective, it is a very well diversified universe. You effectively allocate more to the winners and then less to the laggards. By doing that, you're raising the market standard, but you're also at the same time managing these risks. And I think that's one thing that I always think, you know, why you cannot diversify, but you can manage it.
And that shift in capital allocation towards the winners and away from the laggards is then used in our engagement activity with the companies, because you need to have that real shift in the economy. Those underlying companies, they need to change potentially their strategy, their product, their operations. This is a fundamental shift for many companies in how they are operating themselves. And so using our voice as one of the largest asset managers globally to influence those companies and to push for that real change and the investment required in order to achieve it is really important. And of course, the capital allocation is a essential tool that we have in our ability to influence companies. And later on, we'll go and talk about how we structure that, managing the investment strategies so that they all can also impact and affect that long-term change is as important as managing the financial risks within the portfolios.
We've talked a lot about climate. Is this solely a climate story, or is it more wide-reaching than just solely climate?
It's not just climate. When we think about ESG investing, environmental social governance investing and climate change, it's not just about carbon emissions. It impacts from a social perspective. If you think about making the transition just for society and the social changes that we may be going through, for example, the impact on the workforce or local communities when big industries shift focus or have to close certain aspects of their operations. And for that, you need really strong governance to hold management and the company strategy to account over these timeframes, which often go beyond the lifespan of the current chief executive. And then, of course, when we think about the environmental risks, it's not just around carbon emissions. It's against the whole host of greenhouse gas emissions, including methane, for example, which is a really important one. But biodiversity is key to meeting our climate goals, and the interdependency of looking after today's natural world and the world's ability to meet the climate goals are increasingly being recognised. You can't achieve one without the other. And so therefore, it's really important to think about all of these aspects in an interconnected way, through both using our voice to push for that tangible change in the underlying companies in which we invest, but also then how we allocate that capital towards the winners and away from the laggards.
Jeanette, you talked about change and outcome. And Fadi, from an investment perspective, how do we instill that change and outcome for an investment portfolio? What are the challenges in terms of achieving this type of objective in investment portfolio? And in particular, are there any nuances for an index portfolio, which is such a well-diversified portfolio? I mean, how do we think about these challenges from an index perspective as well?
Climate risk is a long-term financial risk for investment portfolios in general, and index strategies are not different in this context. I think when you design a solution that is a net zero kind of aligned, you effectively want to be aligned or exposed to companies that are well aligned through the transition. Yeah, so the transition journey that Jeanette highlighted. And you want also the capital allocation to reflect the company's effort through the transition in the underlying solution. So ultimately, what we want to do, we want to manage this climate risk or this financial risk by using a net zero goal. That's just as simple as it sounds. So with this comes challenges. And these challenges, obviously, I highlight some of them, but there is also an opportunity with this. So one way we can achieve a solution that has net zero features is using what we call active indexation. And active indexation is a way to move away from traditional benchmarks such as selective global benchmark series or MSCI ACWI or FTSE World, all countries. That's what we mean by active indexation. So when you talk about the engagement that Jeanette mentioned, that is also part of the active indexation, because you effectively, even though you're using a rules-based approach when you typically generate index strategies, when you include the engagement part, it brings also that active indexation feature. So it's an entire ecosystem that I'm referring to here, which we probably will spell out a bit more today.
Fadi, you spoke about a couple of reference points there in terms of those benchmarks, but what are the real challenges and what are the actual nuances that are apparent within those universes in terms of trying to decarbonize those universes and achieve a net zero goal within some of those universes?
It's important to recognize that different regions have different representation of the energy sectors. And even within countries, you might have also a large representation of the, say, highly carbon intensive companies from utilities, materials sectors, and also the energy, the usual suspect. If you take, for example, the UK has a higher representation of the energy sector than you have in Japan. There's one example, Shell, as an example, in the FTSE 100, tend to represent 20 to 30% of the total emissions of the FTSE 100 company.
Shell is a great example because it's a company that we've been using our engagement voice on for a long time. And Shell have shown a real willingness to listen to shareholders and investor expectations. And whilst they're still not yet meeting our quite challenging expectations for the oil and gas industry, they have put out one of the most ambitious climate transition plans that we've seen in the oil and gas industry, committing to direct 50% of their capex by 2025 into low carbon technologies, such as hydrogen, biofuels, electric vehicle charging, all key to the climate transition.
The way these traditional benchmarks are constructed, it's obviously something that will evolve, but this is a very good example of Shell, which I think came as a surprise to me when I looked at the data to that extent. So let's go back to the original questions before we discuss the benchmarks profile when it comes to climate. The typical approaches are exclusion approach or non-exclusion approach. The exclusion approach is historically the most classical one. It's a very transparent way. You have you could have a targeted exclusions. For example, you want to remove coal from the thermal coal. And there are other exclusions that are not necessarily climate related, but they are like ethical screenings or non-based type of screens, which looks at controversial weapon or UNGC. But in targeted exclusions can also be that you have an exclusions of an entire sector, or you can have a exclusions of a handful of stocks in a portfolio to achieve a certain carbon objective.
I suppose, Fadi, if you were to exclude some of those companies on a wholesale basis, is that quite disruptive for an index portfolio? And I suppose, Jeanette, coming back to your point earlier, surely from an engagement perspective, you're going to lose some of the message to those companies.
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to Jeanette's point. I mean, the moment you exclude, you basically remove yourself from the table and makes it much harder sometimes to engage. Of course, you can always keep the engagement as long as the other side is willing to engage, but I'm sure Jeanette can tell you more about it. But that's the fundamental problem with exclusions. If it's not targeted as well, it can be a bit problematic too.
Are there any other means outside exclusions if you really want to achieve this type of goal in an index portfolio?
Yeah, so let me give you an example. If you remove 30 stocks from the MSCI ACWI, you effectively can decarbonize the portfolio by 50% outright. So you don't need many stocks really to actually decarbonize a portfolio. But is this the right way of doing this? It's not always, unless it's targeted, unless you have a rationale, unless it's aligned to the net zero approach or the alignment you wanna have in your portfolios. But in general, you can actually decarbonize portfolios quite easily with exclusions. But the alternative approach is to use targeted exclusions, minimum exclusions, and then use the non-exclusion approach, because the non-exclusion approach is more friendly when it comes to the engagement. You're effectively targeting the laggards by reducing the exposure to them, and then you tend to allocate capital to the winners. And you can do that through the journey by introducing a decarbonization pathway. The typical decarbonization pathway that we use a 50% reduction outright with a certain base year, and then you do 7% year on year. Now, this is until 2050, as Jeanette highlighted. Some might choose to decarbonize outright by 30% and then decarbonize 7% year on year. At the end of the day, the path you decide to take will get you to a point where there is still residual carbon in the portfolios. And this residual carbon, the excess carbon, needs to be somehow removed in some with future technologies or some form of carbon reduction mechanism, which we will not talk about it today, but it's known as carbon offsets. But that's further generations down the line, maybe 10, 15 years, 30 years down the line, 20 years, who knows?
Funny, just to pick up on a number you've noted there, 50% sounds like a really significant level of reduction. Is that quite disruptive in terms of the impact that can have for an investment portfolio, and especially an index portfolio, which is such a well-diversified portfolio?
It's a very, very good question. I think when I discussed the exclusions, you could basically achieve that 50% reduction with an exclusion by 50 basis points. Yeah, with less than 50 basis point tracking error, which is effectively a measure of the potential deviation on average that you can have from a traditional benchmark. Because if your starting point is a traditional benchmark, say like a selective global benchmark series or MSCI ACWI, you're effectively moving away from that traditional benchmark. And that is what is effectively the tracking error what they're trying to measure for you. But when it comes to this non-exclusionary approach, you can achieve a 50% reduction just by itself with a 15 to 20 basis point, actually. Wow. So it's it's fractions of percentages. So it's not like heavy on the portfolio. So that means also that you can achieve similar risk return profile to the underlying benchmark. So you don't really deviate over time to this. And that's one thing, having such indices or set benchmark, it effectively raises the market standard. And it's also a very important point to bring forward.
Thank you, Fadi. It's been incredibly insightful in terms of some of the background you've mentioned. What is really apparent through those discussions is the role that engagement can play. And I think that's often sometimes perhaps a little bit unrepresentative. And I think what we're seeing is that clients are really much focusing on enabling this through an engagement-led framework. And I think that's really important to just comment on here in terms of why an engagement-led framework in terms of enabling this objective is fundamental. And it offers not only a means to a clear directive to those companies, but really incentivizes change in those companies. Now, Jeanette, you must be having discussions with companies on a daily basis. I mean, how does this engagement framework that we've spoken about really make a big difference here?
That's right. It really sits at the heart of making that underlying change to the real economies, to the companies that we're investing in through the different index structures. And of course, ideally, you won't need to utilize the decarbonization pathways within the portfolio, because the pathway will already be happening in the underlying companies and the trajectory in the real economy will keep the portfolio on track. That is what we are hoping for, but you know, there are lots of challenges to that. Engagement is about influencing and using your voice to persuade companies to amend how they are running their business. And for us, it's most effective when we provide that very clear directive of what we expect them to do, when we expect them to do it, and how they should be evidencing that back to us. And that sits at the heart of LGIM's Climate Impact Pledge. Engagement with change, with clear consequences if that change is not forthcoming in the time and format in which we expect to see. So we rank 1,000 companies globally across 15 climate critical sectors. It is completely transparent. It's about being very clear and directive of what you expect to see. Anybody can go onto our website and have a look at how companies are performing on a traffic light system against our expectations. For those 1,000 companies who are not meeting our minimum climate expectations, we will vote against. And we will vote against the chair of the company, the person who is responsible for that business strategy and for keeping the company and the company's management on track to meet the world's climate goals. We are now in the sixth year of our Climate Impact Pledge, and we have seen it can be very effective for change. So of those 1,000 companies, we've identified 60 as being leading laggards in their sector. So if they change their approach to climate, that will have a knock-on impact on their peers, on their sector or region in which they're operating, on their customers and their supply chain. So of those, over the 6 years, we have sanctioned 19 of those companies. And now a sanction for us is threefold. It's obviously a vote against the chair, holding the board accountable. It is also about targeted divestment, and where we have the mandate to do so. And Fadi talked about sometimes the challenges of having very blunt exclusion policies in place. But we find the targeted divestment combined with the third sanction, which is the publicity around it, makes a fundamental difference. CEOs don't tend to like to see their company's name alongside their one of their largest shareholders with a sort of sanction against. And it really re-triggers the discussion for change.
One thing I want to say, the divestment, also the non-exclusion approach I mentioned, has also some form of divestment where you reduce the exposure as well. So divestment doesn't mean just full exclusion, could be just reducing that exposure. But also it's very interesting, Jeanette, I think most of the things that we see today, while everything is focused on carbon, I think the ultimately the an ecosystem with the engagement and broader ESG considerations will actually, it's going to be a big part also of this transition. I think, you know, like areas like biodiversity, typically not reflected in this type of solutions. Good governance is also not reflected. Well-governed company are likely to do well through the transition as well.
Absolutely. And all those elements are embedded into our approach within the Climate Impact Pledge. Yeah. So, for example, some of the companies that we've divested on in the past have been food retailers due to their deforestation commitments or their lack of deforestation commitments. Now, the nice thing is that as we've been doing this over 6 years, we have seen real success over that time frame. And five of those companies have been reinstated back into the portfolio and held up as meeting our expectations over time. So we can see that there is increasing momentum to actually want to embed climate. A really good stat to end is that now of those 60 companies, those leading laggards, over 50% of those now have net zero targets in place. That's up from 20% last year. So there's clear momentum, but the challenge is ensuring those targets are now met.
So I think it's important to use the different strength of different approaches to create the one solution. And part of that solution should be the engagement, because capital allocation alone doesn't do the job. Engagement alone might not do the full job, because capital allocation is effectively the firepower that you can use to engage with companies and make a difference and change the behavior. So we recommend to use the best of the different approaches, but integrate the engagement as a part of the investment process.
Thank you both, Jeanette and Fadi. I think it's been a really insightful discussion and really touched upon some of those key points that we've mentioned in terms of what does net zero actually mean? Why is action required today? And why is this a systemic issue across all of society? How does this translate to goals for an investment portfolio? What are some of the inherent challenges for an index portfolio? And what are the emerging approaches for an index portfolio? And how an optimal approach can be taken in terms of targeted exclusions and a decarbonisation pathway. And then again, the importance of engagement throughout all of this in terms of really incentivizing change and offering a clear directive to companies.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties, and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2022. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.